Hello, and welcome to the podcast for the fall 2012 issue of Pediatric Physical Therapy. I'm Donovan Stutel. This month, articles on using ultrasound to measure muscle thickness, reference values for the functional mobility assessment, hippotherapy, and more. This podcast is brought to you by the Section on Pediatrics of the American Physical Therapy Association. The section seeks to promote the highest quality of life for all children, people with developmental disabilities, and their families. Clinical Bottom Lines will return to the podcast for the winter 2012 issue. Now, here is Editor-in-Chief Anne Van Sant with her editorial, Step by Step.
Sometimes articles are published that lead to great leaps forward in our understanding and practice of physical therapy. But such progress is rare. And as physical therapists, we fully appreciate steady, step-by-step progress that leads over time to significant gains. This issue has a great variety of articles that are worthy of consideration in that they represent steady progress in developing our knowledge base for practice. Three articles in this issue present advancements in measurement. I want to draw your attention to the work of Du and Moreau, who examined ultrasonography for measuring muscle thickness in children with cerebral palsy. As the authors point out, this method of measurement holds promise for obtaining an estimate of muscle strength in children who have difficulty with selective motor control. As we progress in our use of technology in clinical practice, ultrasonography holds promise for more accurate estimates of weakness in this population. Marchese and colleagues show additional progress, having worked to gather reference data for comparison of the functional performance of children and youth with sarcoma to peers without cancer. They demonstrate that we are addressing important needs of distinct populations who require our services while receiving intervention for their primary disease. In addition, the Move and Play group is publishing a new measure of activity endurance for children with CP that is based on parental report. This measure is in the beginning stages of development, so additional validity testing is needed before the measure can be applied in practice. But we look forward to continued development of this test. Two reports related to using horses for therapeutic gain in children with neuromotor impairments are included in this issue. These reports demonstrate attempts to document the effects of these interventions. Bongers and Tuchin were not able to find significant effects of therapeutic horseback riding on the cardiorespiratory status of children with neuromotor dysfunction, but they point out that the nature of the intervention was such that one would not expect gains in these bodily functions. These findings, of course, do not suggest that benefits might not be observed in other body functions, and indeed, Encheft and colleagues show effects of a 10-week bout of hippotherapy on kinematic parameters of gait. Encheft and colleagues' work demonstrate good progress in documenting the effect of this intervention. But again, work remains to demonstrate that hippotherapy produces gains in functional activities, which are so very important to the children we serve. Thus, with continued effort, we will make steady progress, step by step.
Our first research article this month is A Comparison of Two Techniques for Measuring Rectus Femoris Muscle Thickness in Cerebral Palsy by Ashley Du and Noel Moreau, both of the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston, South Carolina. Precise measures of muscle sizes are useful when investigating weakness in children with cerebral palsy. Therefore, the purpose of this study was to determine agreement between two muscle thickness measurements of the rectus femoris in children with cerebral palsy. 13 ambulatory youth with cerebral palsy, mean age 14 years, participated in this study. Measures of rectus femoris thickness were obtained bilaterally using ultrasound imaging. Three measures were obtained at 50% thigh length and averaged, yielding the MT50 measurement. Maximum muscle thickness, the MAX-MT measurement, was also determined through repeated measurements toward the proximal insertion of the rectus femoris. The Bland-Altman plot showed that all values, except for one outlier, fell within 95% limits of agreement, showing excellent agreement. However, a constant bias toward higher values with the MAX-MT measurement method was observed. The authors conclude that given the time-consuming nature of obtaining max-MT, the MT50 measurement may be a more feasible alternative when estimating maximum muscle thickness of the rectus femoris. Next, development of reference values for the functional mobility assessment by Victoria Marchese of Lebanon Valley College in Annville, Pennsylvania, and six others. The purpose of this study was to obtain reference values for healthy participants performing the Functional Mobility Assessment, FMA. The FMA is a reliable and valid tool used to examine functional abilities subjectively and objectively in patients with lower extremity sarcoma in all components of the International Classification of Functioning, Disability, and Health Model, body function, activity, and participation. 503 healthy children, adolescents, and young adults, representing a sample of convenience, participated in this study. There were 260 females, 243 males, with ages ranging between 10 and 21 years. The following are means and standard deviations for all participants. Timed up and down stairs, 6.18 seconds, plus or minus 0.8 seconds. Timed up and go, 3.78 seconds, plus or minus 0.6 seconds. 9-minute run walk, 4,161 feet, plus or minus 893 feet. And the FMA total, 59, plus or minus 3. The reference values provided in this study will allow healthcare professionals to compare the functional abilities of children, adolescents, and young adults with lower extremity sarcoma to age and gender-matched healthy peers when using the FMA. Next, development of the Early Activity Scale for Endurance for Children with Cerebral Palsy by Sarah Westcott McCoy of the University of Washington in Seattle, Washington, and six others. The Early Activity Scale for Endurance, EASE, was developed as a clinically feasible measure of endurance for physical activity in young children with cerebral palsy. Validity and reliability were evaluated. Participants included 414 children with cerebral palsy and 106 without cerebral palsy. Parents completed the EASE, an 11-item self-report measure. For construct validity, EASE scores were compared by age, gender, and gross motor function classification system levels, with a value of 0 assigned for children without cerebral palsy. In subgroups, convergent validity with the 6-minute walk test and test-retest reliability with a second EASE were evaluated. EASE scores differed significantly by gross motor function classification system level, but not by age or gender. The EASE correlated moderately with an R value of 0.57 with the 6-minute walk test. Test-retest reliability was high, with an intraclass correlation 2-1 of 0.95. The authors conclude that the EASE has acceptable psychometrics for use in practice and research to estimate endurance for physical activity in young children with cerebral palsy. Hippotherapy effects on trunk, pelvic, and hip motion during ambulation in children with neurological impairments by Jenna Encheff of the University of Findlay in Findlay, Ohio, Charles Armstrong, Michelle Masterson, Christine Fox, and Philip Gribble. This study investigated the effects of a 10-week hippotherapy program on trunk, pelvis, and hip joint positioning during the stance phase of gait. 11 children with neurological disorders and impaired ambulation participated. There were 6 boys and 5 girls, with a mean age of 8 years. Joint range of motion data were collected via 3-dimensional computerized gait analysis before and after the program. Paired T-tests were performed on kinematic data for each joint. significant improvements and large effect sizes for sagittal plane hip positions at initial contact and toe-off were found. No differences in pelvic or trunk positioning were determined, although sagittal plane pelvic positioning displayed a trend toward improvement with large effect sizes. Several trunk variables displayed moderate effect sizes with a trend toward more upright positioning. The authors conclude that improvements in pelvic and hip joint positioning and more normalized vertical trunk position may indicate increased postural control during gait after 10 sessions of hippotherapy. Next, physiologic demands of therapeutic horseback riding in children with moderate to severe motor impairments, an exploratory study by Bart Bongers and Tim Talken, both of the University Medical Center Utrecht in Utrecht, the Netherlands. The purpose of this study was to examine energy expenditure at rest and during a single therapeutic horseback riding session in children with moderate to severe motor impairments. Heart rate, oxygen uptake, and minute ventilation were measured continuously during a 10-minute rest period and during a typical therapeutic horseback riding session. 7 children, 4 males and 3 females, with a mean age of 12 years, completed the protocol. Significant increases from rest were seen for mean heart rate, oxygen uptake, minute ventilation, and energy expenditure. Based on oxygen uptake, 43% of the session consisted of sedentary activity intensity, 44% of the session consisted of light activity intensity, and 12% of the session consisted of moderate to vigorous activity intensity. There were large inter-individual differences. The authors conclude that the physiological demands of therapeutic horseback riding in children with moderate to severe motor impairments are moderate. However, considering the short duration of maintaining moderate to vigorous exercise intensity during therapeutic horseback riding, in combination with the low training frequency, group data indicate that it is unlikely that therapeutic horseback riding will improve cardiopulmonary fitness in these children. Next, the effect of knowledge translation procedures on application of information from a continuing education conference by Joseph Schreiber of Chatham University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Robin Dole of Widener University in Chester, Pennsylvania. This study investigated the effect of knowledge translation procedures as part of a continuing education conference for pediatric physical therapists on knowledge and frequency of use of tests and measures. All 28 attendees were invited to complete a baseline self-report survey on knowledge and frequency of use of skills related to the use of standardized measures. 11 attendees participated in the additional knowledge translation activities, including a 90-minute session during the conference and follow-up online interaction. On the baseline survey, conference attendees rated themselves higher on frequency of use compared with knowledge. The 8 conference attendees who completed the follow-up survey rated themselves higher in some aspects of knowledge and frequency of use of the skills related to standardized assessment. The authors conclude that the knowledge translation activities were easy to implement and led to positive changes in the level of knowledge and frequency of use of tests and measures. Medical and surgical procedures experienced by young children with cerebral palsy by Ashley McClellan, Courtney Ciparoni, Danielle Giancola, Don Armstrong, and Doreen Bartlett, all of the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario, Canada. The purpose of this study was to determine the variation in medical and surgical procedures experienced by children with cerebral palsy by gross motor function classification system, GMFCS levels, and geographical region. This was a secondary analysis of an existing database completed on 386 children with cerebral palsy, 56% male, 44% female, with ages ranging from 18 months to 5 years, with a mean age of 38 months. The total number of procedures experienced by young children was analyzed using one-way analyses of variance. The following all varied significantly by GMFCS level. Botulinum toxin A, Botox injections, gastrostomies, shunts, and interventions involving the gastrointestinal tract, respiration, and eyes. No meaningful geographical variations were detected between East, Central, and West regions in North America. This study describes variations in medical and surgical procedures for children with cerebral palsy across GMFCS levels. The authors conclude that this information is useful for therapists and parents when planning comprehensive services for young children with cerebral palsy. Next, single-subject design study of two types of supramalleolar orthoses for young children with Down syndrome by Janet Taminga of Beloit-Turner School District and Building Blocks Pediatric Physical Therapy in Beloit, Wisconsin, Kathy Martin, and Ellen Miller. This study examined the effects of two types of supramalleolar orthoses on gross motor skills of young children with Down syndrome. Two children participated in this prospective, single-subject, alternating treatment design with three conditions: baseline phase with shoes but without orthoses, first intervention phase, and second intervention phase. The gross motor function measure was used to collect data on motor skills. The two standard deviation band method was used for data analysis. Both children demonstrated improvement using the sure step compared to shoes only. One child also improved with the DAFO number 4. Both families chose to continue using the sure step at the conclusion of the study. The authors conclude that orthoses for young children with Down syndrome continue to be the standard of care. However, research has yet to confirm the most effective type of orthosis or when, developmentally, to introduce orthoses. Next, child temporal spatial gait characteristics and variability during uphill and downhill walking by Keith Stern and Jinger Gottschall, both of the Pennsylvania State University in University Park, Pennsylvania. Gait maturation, evidenced in, for example, the ability to walk over non-level surfaces, is an important indicator of typical development in children. Therefore, the purpose of this study was to compare the walking strategies used by children and adults during hill walking. Temporal spatial gait parameters and trial-to-trial coefficient of variation of these parameters were compared between 30 children aged 3.5 to 5.5 years and 30 adults during level walking and 15-degree hill walking. Compared with the adult group, the child group coefficient of variation was greater during all conditions. Furthermore, unique to the child group, there was a significant increase in variability during downhill walking. The authors conclude that it is evident from the current results that children aged 3.5 to 5.5 years do not yet exhibit a mature gait, and that downhill walking may increase fall risk. Attention should be given to gait variability and non-level walking when investigating or training children's gait. Last this month, a pilot study to profile the lower limb musculoskeletal health in children with obesity by Grace O'Malley of Children's University Hospital in Dublin, Ireland, Juliet Hussey, and Edna Roche. Evidence suggests a negative effect of obesity on musculoskeletal health in children. This pilot study was undertaken to investigate the presence of musculoskeletal impairments in children with obesity and to explore the relationships among body mass index, physical activity, and musculoskeletal measures. Lower limb musculoskeletal health, physical activity, and screen time were assessed using standardized methods. 17 children with a mean age of 12 years participated. Moderate negative correlations were found between body composition and range of motion, flexibility, and strength. Genu valgum deformity was moderately positively correlated to body mass index. The authors conclude that the results of this pilot study suggest that children who are obese may present with musculoskeletal impairments of the lower limb. Clinicians working with children who are obese should conduct a thorough musculoskeletal assessment and consider the presence of impairments when promoting physical activity. Thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of Science Audio, online at www.scienceaudio.net. Please send your comments or questions to PEDPT, that's PEDPT, at scienceaudio.net. Get the full text of all pediatric physical therapy articles online at www.pedpt.com.